Okay, good morning, everyone. A great zechus to be able to learn with all of you today. I thank Sandy for the sponsorship, and thank all of you for taking the time, Baruch Hashem, to come together to learn, to grow a little bit, even during these challenging times. The beauty of Torah, there are certain things that change, right? So our access to certain things, how we shop, how we work, how our children go to school, all of those things change. But our ability to learn Torah is one of the beautiful, immutable, unchangeable parts of our life. The medium may change, and how we gather may change, but the Torah itself and the profundity and the beauty and the holiness, that never changes. That always remains. So with that, let's continue. So I'd like to spend one more week, or I should say at least one more week, on Kapitel Samech Vav, chapter 66 in Tehillim. So if you remember again, last week we introduced this particular kapitel by really focusing virtually the entire shir on the very unique author of this kapitel. This kapitel, the Mefarshim explained, authored by none other than Menashe, the son of Chizkiyo Melech Yehuda, an individual, again, who reigned for an extraordinarily long time, 55 years, 22 of which he was Yerusha, 33 of which he was a Baal Tshuva. But again, despite his willingness and his overwhelming ability to change, he was still unable to undo all of the negativity that had occurred. And we spoke about how in the opening phrases of this particular kapitel, Menashe laments the fact that although he had undergone such comprehensive cathartic change, his reputation and his standing as a Rasha, someone who was so evil, was something he was never really able to transcend and overcome. So I'd like to continue a little bit, drawing your attention this morning to two specific psukim. So focusing now on source number one for just a moment, if you focus yourself over here on psukim Hey and Vav, verses 5 and 6. So again, the kapitel writes, and again, it's important to understand, this is why the in general, when we've gone through Tehillim, so we generally assume that David HaMelech is the author of most kapitlach, and therefore, again, when trying to understand the kapitel, we try to understand what's happening in David HaMelech's life that has caused him to write this kapitel. So here it's a little bit different. Here we know that the author is Menashe. We now understand, excuse me, based on yesterday, on last week's shir, the circumstances of Menashe's life, we understand who the author is, and now begin to appreciate his words. So take a look, number one, verse 5, Pasuk Hey. So the kapitel writes, L'chu ur'u mifalos Elokim, nora alila al b'nei Adam. Go and see the deeds of God, awesome in his deeds towards mankind. So the Malbim understands, if you jump for a moment just to number two. So the Malbim comments on this particular pasuk, and he quotes something very interesting. He says, L'chu yomar shagam shemina anhaga hativis. Lo yakiru ha'amim hashkach ha'aseh shemem o'ra'o. L'chu u'ra'u mifalos Elokim al b'nei Adam. So the Malbim points out something amazing over here. He says, if you want to understand God, right, after all, at the end of the day, all of us try to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's our ultimate life mission, to come close and to understand, or to understand and to come close. You know, people have different approaches to this. For some people, a greater understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu leads to a heightened level of dveikus, a heightened level of connection. And for others, it's the heightened level of connection that ultimately leads to a heightened level of understanding. Both correct approaches, just different. So what the kapitel is saying over here is, if you want to go ahead and understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu, go and see the deeds of God. L'chu u'ra'u mifalos Elokim, nora alila alad, abnei Adam. Awesome in his deeds toward mankind. So this happens to be a beautiful idea. And the truth is, the notion that how do you come to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You come to understand God by looking at the world. Again, that's like the natural world. L'chu u'ra'u mifalos Elokim. Look at the natural world. And also, nora alila al b'nei Adam. Awesome in his deeds towards mankind. On a very basic level, there are two ways in which one comes to a level of appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The natural world, right? The Rambam writes about this, that if one wants to appreciate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nature is a very powerful tool. A person goes outside and a person sees the beautiful sky. A person sees the strong winds. A person sees the beautiful rain. A person sees different things in nature, and you realize, my gosh, there must be an artist, right? There must be someone who's created this incredible masterpiece of natural beauty. It's impossible that it just occurred on its own. It's impossible that it just happened. So one sees the natural world and one comes to an appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Similarly, Nora Alila Abani Adam, one looks at the body. One looks at the body, and especially this is so incredibly amazing to us in the times in which we're living. We're living in the shadow of a virus that modern science still doesn't fully understand. And it attacks the body in ways that we don't fully understand and behaves in ways that we don't fully understand. So we see the overwhelming nature of the virus. But the amazing part also is the corollary to that is, look how amazing the human body is. Because before 2 months ago, when most of us only heard of coronavirus, you know, in conjunction with Wuhan, China, our bodies were working perfectly, right? And Baruch Hashem, like all of these complex systems that this virus attacks, Baruch Hashem, we're working in such a beautiful symphony, in such a beautiful harmony. So if you want to see the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just look at the own processes that occur inside of you each and every day. So there's this incredible balance. I can see the greatness of God by looking out, or I can see the greatness of God by looking in. I can see the greatness of God by just looking at nature and seeing how beautiful and spectacular, how many different moving parts there are. And I could also look at my own body and I could realize again how complex the systems are and yet how amazing it is that there is a Ribono Shel Olam who has fashioned me. And not only has he fashioned me, but all of these systems and all of the organs and all of the parts only work because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wills them to work in every single moment. But then the kapitel goes on. Go back to number one for just a moment. Pasuk Vav, and this is really what we're going to spend the majority of our time on this morning. Then Menashe, King Menashe, goes on and he says, Hafach Yam Liabasha. So remember again, the setup and progression over here is very important. So in Pasuk He, so the kapitel, the author is talking about the greatness of God. From where do you see the greatness of God? In the natural world and in the physical world. I'll call it in nature and in man. Externally and internally, you begin to see the greatness of God. But then Menashe goes on and he says, you want to see how great God is? Hafach yam liyabasha. He turned the sea into dry land. Banar yavru beregel sham nismechabo. They crossed the river by foot, and there we rejoiced with him. So this is fascinating. Now Menashe is talking about the greatness of God. And so he wants to give an example. Because remember again, in Pasuk Hey, we're talking kind of in just general terms. Right? In general terms. The general terms are, go and see the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Go and see the deeds of God. Awesome in his deeds towards mankind. See the natural world. See the physical world. See the human body. See beautiful nature. Okay. That matters. But if you really want to see a demonstration of God's greatness, see how he turned the sea, the yam, into dry land. And how he turned ultimately the Nar, the river, and allowed human beings to traverse the river on foot. So Rashi says over here, what is this a reference to? So Rashi says, Hafach yam liyabasha. He went, I'm in number three. He changed the sea into dry land, Yamsuf. That is a reference to the splitting of the Red Sea. The Ibn Ezra writes, Hafach. No. It's a reference to the Yarden, to the splitting of the Jordan River when the Jewish people entered into the land of Israel. The Mitzudas David number 5 says, you're both right. Hafach Yam, he changed the sea into dry land. Be'ez Yatsu Mimitzrayim. So the Yam, the splitting of the sea, that is a reference to Yamsuf. That's a reference to the splitting of the body of water when we left Egypt. Banar Yavru Beregel. What does it mean when it says that we crossed the river on foot? Bimei Yoshua Avru Beyardin Beraglam. In the days of Yoshua, we went ahead and they split the Yarden and split the Jordan River, and that's how we passed through it on foot. pass through it on foot. And if you go out and you look at the Malbim in number 6, so the Malbim writes, Hafach Yam Li Abasha Bishvil Yisrael. He, Kadosh Baruch Hu, split the Red Sea, the Yam Suf, for the benefit of the Jewish people. V'chein Nar Yavru Beregel. And so too, again, we passed through the Jordan River on foot. Shebene Adam Avras Hayardim Beraglam. Sham Nismecha Bo.
The Malbim writes something amazing. Because what did we discover? What did we discover when God split the Red Sea? And what did we discover when God split the Jordan River? We discovered that God has control over nature.
Yes, he also, we discovered that God has providence over people's daily lives. But more importantly, part we're going to focus on, we discovered that God has control over nature. Okay, so, and that God has the ability not to have control of nature, but that God has the ability to change nature. That although we normally look at nature as an immutable, unchangeable construct, it's not true. Even the laws of nature, as we know, are subject to change. When did we see that? When HaKadosh Baruch Hu split the Red Sea, when we left Egypt, and when he split the Jordan River, when we entered into the land of Israel, entered into Eretz Yisrael. So now, if you bring this together, what you see is really something quite amazing. So you have King Menashe, the author of this particular capital, beginning a section by telling us, see the awesomeness of God. The awesomeness of God is everywhere to behold. You could see the awesomeness of God ultimately in the beautiful nature, in the natural world. You could see the awesomeness of God in the complexity of the human body. But if you really want to see the greatest demonstration of God's awesomeness, the greatest demonstration of divine power, look at how he split the sea, the Red Sea, the Yam Suf when we left Egypt, and how he split the Jordan River when we came into Eretz Yisrael. And the question I'd like to grapple with today a little bit is that why? Meaning, why is the splitting of the seas considered to be the greatest demonstration of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's power? Meaning, don't get me wrong, the splitting of the seas, of course, is amazing. And the splitting of the seas, of course, is dramatic. And remember, again, more importantly, the splitting of the seas were the type of miracle that were not just nice miracles, they were necessary miracles. Remember, again, when we were by the Yam Suf, the Egyptians were in hot pursuit. And had God not split the Red Sea at that moment and allowed us to go through, the Egyptians would have caught up with us and would have slaughtered us. And similarly, again, although when we crossed into the land of Israel, we were not in danger anymore. Remember, again, we were by then a different nation, a strong nation, a nation of soldiers, a nation of warriors under the leadership of Yoshua. But again, the Jordan River was standing between us and Eretz Yisrael. So it was necessary for the actualization of our destiny. So I understand why the splitting of the waters ultimately are important. But why do they become the greatest demonstration of divine strength? Meaning personally, if you ask me, I think, you know, the Chasam Sofer points out that one of the reasons that we celebrate Lag BaOmer, that Lag BaOmer has a Yom Tov identity to it, is because Lag BaOmer was the day when the man began to fall in the desert. And our ancestors in the desert, they ate whatever food they took out of Egypt, lasted them for the first 32 days that they left Egypt. Lag BaOmer, they ran out of food that they had from Egypt, and it was the first day that the man fell. Now, the man fell 3.5 million people for 40 years. For 40 years. That's incredible. Don't get me wrong. Splitting of the sea is fantastic, is exceptional. It happened twice. And probably, again, for a couple of hours each time. Not more than a couple of hours each time. 3.5 million people. You look at the logistics that goes into these meal programs now, right? That they're doing at the schools. And you see the cars, right? People spend 40 minutes trying to get this. God fed 3.5 million people, no lines, no waiting, no messed up orders. You don't have to post signs on your car door. How many people do you have? How many kids? Right? What's your name? There's nothing. It shows up at your door. It's right there. It's dramatically amazing. Now that's
a miracle. That's stupendous. That's overwhelming. Or again, look at the makos, the plagues that God brought in Egypt. Now granted, the plagues weren't as much miracles that God did for us. They were much more punitive against the Egyptians. But at the end of the day, those are dramatic as well. Yet, when Menashe wants to illustrate the greatness of God, he chooses two miracles. We are a nation of miracles, no shortage of miracles, right? What about the Genesis story? What about creation narrative? There are so many miracles. Avraham Avinu being saved from the fiery furnace. Granted, that's Medrash and it's not text, but still it's a miracle nevertheless. So many other miracles that happened to our ancestors. The waters were bitter by Mara, and Moshe Avinu throws in a piece of wood and suddenly again they're able to become sweet. So many miracles we have. Sinaitic revelation. God spoke to us. So many miracles, yet Menashe explains the greatest miracle of our people, the greatest miracle, is ultimately the miracle of the splitting of the seas. Why? Why is that? So, interestingly enough, I think to answer this, as Hashgacha Pratis would have it, as Divine Providence would have it, I think the answer is really found in the Parsha. Interestingly enough, if you take a look, remember this week we have the great Zuchus to read the double Parshios of Bahar Bichu Kosai, double Parsha. We're finishing off Sefer Vayikra this week. So there is two fascinating sections. Excuse me. If you look at number 7, so the Psukim say as follows. So remember, what I'm quoting to over here in number 7 is, Ve'emos ishmu'uli, ve'lo sa'asu es kolem etzol sa'ila, ve'em bichu kosai tim asu, ve'es mishpat haib tigal nafshechem, level tiasos es kolem etzol sa'ila hafrechem es brisi. So this is a section, you can see the English translation over here, but if you do not listen to me and do not perform all these commandments, and if you despise my statutes and reject my ordinances, not performing any of my commandments, thereby breaking my covenant, this is the section called the Tochacha. A series of overwhelming curses and punishments that are ultimately handed down to the Jewish people in the event that we do not follow in the ways of God. If we do not go ahead and follow in the derech, follow in the pathway of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says, then I'm sorry, there's repercussions. Remember again, one of the most important fundamental principles in Yiddishkeit is every action has a reaction, right? That's not Einstein that came up with that, right? That wasn't new with the theory of relativity, right? At the end of the day, every action has a reaction is the fundamental premise on which the entire world was created. What you do has an impact. And there is no such thing as an action that doesn't have an impact. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu kind of lays that out almost like in a very simple, straightforward way. The parsha begins by saying, if you listen to my mitzvos, the world will be a certain way. If chas v'shalom, you don't listen to my mitzvos, the world will be a different way. That's the way the world works. Every action has a ramification. Every action has a reaction. So this is the section called the Tochacha. And we know this section, an overwhelming section, so overwhelming again that the Minag Yisrael, right, the Minag of the Jewish people, is that we read this section of the Tochacha, what we call the curses, in an undertone, because it is so overwhelming and so shocking and so difficult to hear from a God who loves us so much and cares about us so much and exists to serve us. I know it sounds like a strange thing, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all he wants to, like Chazal say, Chazal give the mashal, rabbis give the mashal, that more than the mother, more than the baby wants to nurse from the mother, the mother wants to nurse the child, right? If the mother doesn't express the milk, if the mother doesn't nurse, it becomes painful for her. So that's the mashal, that's the parable that Chazal give to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael. More than we want to nurse from God and be the beneficiary of His blessing, He wants to give to us. But yet at the same time, there's a relationship. And relationships have a relationship contract. They have agreements. Right? And in a relationship, there's an understanding that each party brings something to the table and each party is careful and is loving and is attentive to the needs of the other. And if one party pulls out of the relationship contract, then the relationship ultimately is fractured. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm willing to give you the world, but I expect you to be present in this relationship as well. And if you're present, then wonderful. And if you're not present, chas v'shalom, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, here's the reaction to that. This is called the Tochacha. Now, we're not going to focus on the Tochacha. What I want to draw your attention to is something fascinating, which is what occurs in the aftermath of the Tochacha. So if you take a look at number 8, And number eight. So this is all the way at the end of Parshas Bichul Kosai, right? So the second of the double Parshios this week, the second Parshas Bichul Kosai teaches that Tochacha, teaches a series of curses. Right after the curses are over, right? Sechadish Baruch Hu says, right, curses are over. The next section, number eight, Vaidaber Shema Oshalimar, Daber al Bnei Yisav V'Amarta Aleyem, Ish Kiyafli Neder Be'erkecha Nefashos LaHashem. The section that occurs right after the Tochacha is literally, again, the section that says, speak to the Jewish people and say to them, if a person, literally translated, when a man expresses a vow, pledging value of lives to the Lord. What is this talking about? So this pasuk is talking about the halachos of erchin. Erchin means a vow, pledging one's value to the Beis HaMikdash. So for example, I could pledge many things to the Beis HaMikdash. I could pledge wood to the Beis HaMikdash. I could pledge flour to the Beis HaMikdash. I could pledge animals to the Beis HaMikdash. I could pledge money to the Beis HaMikdash. What I could also do is pledge my value to the Beis HaMikdash. If I say Erki Alai, my value is upon me, I pledge my value. Now, interestingly enough, from a biblical perspective, what we do is we create objective constructs. So we'll say that a male between the ages of so-and-so and so-and-so has a value of X. A woman has a value of Y. A person of a certain lower age, higher age. We assign objective values to different genders and to different ages. This has nothing to do with my value as a person. This has nothing to do with my value in terms of my livelihood or my skill set. These are just objective categories created by the Torah that if a person pledges his or her quote-unquote value, I pay. And the obvious question is, remember again, we assume that not only are the verses of the Torah significant, but what? The juxtaposition of those verses are significant as well. And as such, we must ask ourselves a very simple question. Why does the Torah choose to put the halachos of erchin, the laws of personal vows, we'll call it value vows, right after the Tochacha, right after the series of curses? Again, remember, we're assuming that the placement of different sections is not random. So you have to understand something. You close out the Tochacha section, and the truth is, it's overwhelming. It leaves you gasping for breath. The sheer enormity of the punishments, the sheer enormity of the devastation, the sheer enormity of the destruction and desolation that the Tochacha spells out is very dramatic. So the truth is, you would have thought that the section that follows the Tochacha would be something a bit more uplifting, would be something a bit more inspirational, would be something a bit more soothing. Yet God chooses to get into the mechanistic details regarding erchin, value vows. But I'll show you something amazing. If you take a look at number 9, the Choza of Lublin, Rabbi Yaakov Yitzchak Halevi Horowitz, who lived from 1745 to 1815, one of the great Hasidic masters, he writes as follows. Look at the end of the first line, number 9. Lama nismucha parshas erchin leparshas atochacha beparshasan. Why is there a juxtaposition between the Tochacha, the curses, and the laws of Erchin, Erech vows, value vows? And look what he says. This is incredible. The Chashasha Torah, Shema Acher Tochacha Kazu, Tipol Rucho Shel Adam Bikirbo. V'yomer, Ein Li Shum Erech V'chashivos. Says the Chosa something absolutely amazing. You know, after a Tochacha, the conclusion that a person might come to after reading a Tochacha is what? If I've done these things that have elicited this response from God, I obviously have no worth. I have no value. Because someone who had a value wouldn't have these things happen to them. Someone who has a worth wouldn't have to suffer through these catastrophic circumstances like I just had to live to. So the Chosa writes, and this is incredibly profound, the normal assumption is that when we go through difficult times, that is a reflection of who and what we are, or better stated, who and what we're not. Meaning, obviously, if I've suffered, that must mean I'm not holy. If I've suffered, it must mean that I don't have worth. If I've suffered, it must mean that obviously I am a compromised individual. Because if I was righteous, this wouldn't be happening. If I was good, these circumstances would not be visited upon me. If I was truly living in accordance with the will of God, my life would and should be better. So the fact that this, the tochecha, is happening to me, indicates that I must have no worth. So says the Chosef so beautifully, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes along and says, a person will say, listen to these words, a person will say, if I'm living through the tochecha, it must be that I have no value and I have no importance. Lezeh nitna miyad parshas erchin, says the Chosef. To counter this erroneous mindset, immediately after the tochecha, what does God give us? He gives us the parsha of erchin. He gives us the laws of erech vows. Lahoros she'in lecha adam, she'in lo erech. Do you know what the amazing part about the erchin vows is? Everyone has a value. Everyone has a value. In fact, the laws of Erechin begin as of when? They begin as of 30 days old. Once you are a 30-day-old baby, because remember again, from the perspective of halacha, within 30 days, a child has not yet demonstrated viability. But once you pass the 30-day threshold and you are now a viable human being, by definition, you have a value. The laws of Erechin, says the Chosef, you see, everyone thinks that the laws of Erechin are a mechanistic detail or mechanistic law regarding how much money you owe to the Beis HaMikdash. So I say I pledge my value, how much do I owe? I say I pledge my wife's value, how much do I owe? Says the Chosef, do you understand the pnimius? Do you understand what the message is? The message of Erechin, the message of Erech vows, the value vows, is that every single person has a value. There is no such thing as a person who is bereft of value. It's only the truth, I take it back. Once you're dead, your value is no longer there. But at the end of the day, any person who is alive has a value. Does every person have the same value? No. There are different values, there are different levels, because there are different people who lead different qualities of life. But at the end of the day, every single person has a value. Says the Chosef, that is the nature of the juxtaposition. You come out of a tochecha feeling worthless. You come out of a tochecha thinking to yourself, you know what, I guess what God is telling me is that if I mess up badly enough in life, to warrant the tochecha, I must have divested myself of all of my holiness. I must have divested myself of all of my goodness. I am clearly worthless. To which the Torah then comes along and says, Daber el b'nei Yisav amart aleyem, ish ki yafli neder be'erkecha nefashos la'Hashem. Torah teaches me the laws of erech vows. And what do erech vows teach me? That I have a value. That I have a value. That no matter how badly I mess up in life, I have a value. I matter. Is my value as much today as it was a year ago? Maybe yes, maybe no. Because the value fluctuates. And we're going to see how it fluctuates. The value fluctuates. But there is no such thing as a Jew who doesn't have value. There's no such thing as a human being that doesn't have a value. Once you're 30 days old until you're dead, you have a value. There's a value that you have in this world. The value could change. The value could shift. But the value is there. Says the Chosef. Do you understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing for us after the tochecha? He's restoring our sense of self. He's restoring our sense of self. Because you read through a tochecha and you begin to feel worthless. You read through a tochecha and you begin to feel like a nothing. You read through a tochecha and you begin just to feel totally extra unnecessary and dispensable. And you assume, the logical conclusion is, if I make bad decisions and make wrong choices, and go ahead and chas v'shalom land myself up, God forbid, in a situation of tochecha, I've divested myself of all my value. To counter that erroneous mindset, immediately after the tochecha, the Torah gives us the laws of Erechin. And the laws of Erechin, the laws of Erech vows, teach us every person has a value. No matter how badly you've messed up, no matter how many wrong turns you've made in life, no matter how many bad decisions, how many dead ends, how many brick walls you've hit, at the end of the day, every person has a value. Such an incredible yesod. So many times in life we make mistakes. And we think that because we make mistakes, sometimes we make doozies, right? Sometimes we make dramatic mistakes. And we think that because of our dramatic mistakes, I'm done. Like, I'm not even, like, it's not even like, go back to start. No, I'm done. I'm done. Says the Choza, no matter how bad your mistake is, you still have value. No matter how terrible your misdeed may be, you still have an erech. No matter how badly you've messed up in life, you've never divested yourself of all of your holiness. Now, first of all, before we even go on, you could begin to... Well, let's go on. But I want to show you an interesting detail. There's a fascinating detail in this. Take a look at number 10. So I want to show you some of the fascinating halachas when it comes to Erechin vow. So look at number 10. V'im mi ben shishim shana v'mala. So again, if you are above the age of 60, im zachar, so listen to this. Above the age of 60, so the value of a man is 15 silver shekel, and the value of a woman is 10 silver shekel. Okay, we're not going to get into gender issues right now. We're just going to focus on, right, the value of a man, 15 silver shekel, value of a woman is 10 silver shekel after the age of 60. I want to show you something amazing. Take a look at number 11. So just so you understand the way like the age brackets work for Erech vows is pretty much below 20, 20 to 60, and above 60. So what's the value between 20 and 60? V'haya erkecha hazachar ben esrim shana v'ben shishim shana. V'haya erkecha chamishim shekel kesef b'shekel hakodesh. So listen to this. The value of a man, quote unquote, between 20 and 60 is 50 silver shekels. 50 between 20 and 60. Once you get to 60, your value, quote unquote, goes down to 15 silver shekels. So do you see what just happens over here? Between 20 and 60, we'll just focus on the man right now. Between 20 and 60, value of a man is 50 silver shekels. Above 60, 15. Almost like a three-quarter decrease in value from between 20 and 60 and 60 and above. What's the pshat? Right? Remember again, I just want to point out, These values, it's not like they're based on how much work you can do, right? There are different ways that you could pledge a person's value based on their skill set or based on their profession. That's not these vows. These are objective constructs that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made. So we assume, again, people like wine get better with age, right? So we assume that, again, the older a person is, the more chashiv they are. And yet, again, we see a dramatic decrease in value above 60. 20 to 60, I'm worth 50 shkalim. Above 60, I'm worth 15 shkalim. 15. I go from 50 to 15. What's the pshat? Take a look at number 12. Says the Chiddush Arim, the Ger Rebbe, something absolutely amazing. Number 12. Ukvar bi Rav HaKadosh Chiddush Arim. How could it be that my value goes down by two-thirds? By two-thirds, my value goes down from 50 silver shkalim to 15 silver shkalim over the age of 60. Listen to the words of the Chiddush Arim. V'hainu taimeh, because do you know what happens? Now listen to his words. Because once you're over 60, ki kvar ein bo es koach ha'eschatshus kimo bimei hane'urim. Listen to his words. Because the koach, the ability to start over and to start again, is not the same over 60 as it is below the age of 60. Va'afim osim kim va'afim osim kimo ben esrim v'malo, ach me'achar shenechsar kan, eish ha'islavos va'ischachos, im kein nigra erko biyoser. The Ger Rebbe says something amazing. He says, because everyone knows that above the age of 60, it is so much harder to go ahead and summon up the strength, to summon up the resolve, and to summon up the willpower to change like you can when you are below 60. What is the Chiddush HaRim saying? So this is really, I think, let's talk about this outside a little bit, because this is really an incredible and overwhelming idea. Change is always possible. Change is always possible. But the Chiddush HaRim is saying, let's look at human nature. And human nature is, the older you get, the more set in your ways you become. And the more set in your ways you become, the less likely it is that you will change. Change is always possible. A person could change literally until their last breath. But just because change is possible, change is not always probable. Change is possible, just not probable. So in other words, most people don't change. Most people kind of settle into something and they kind of put on cruise control, right? It's life cruise control, and that's pretty much it for the rest of my life. I choose a derech. People do it differently. Some people do it when they're 20, some people do it when they're 30, some people do it when they're 50, and they go, and they talk about change, and they think about change, and they contemplate change, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do all these things. Most times it doesn't happen. Again, not because people don't care, and not because people are bad, just the opposite, because we are creatures of habit. So once I create my habit, once I create my derech, once I create my approach, pretty much, that's it. So says the Chiddush HaRim something so amazing. Above 60, your probability of change plummets. Is it still there? I don't want anyone, Chas v'Shalom, to despair about this, because you're going to see there's a beautiful message in this. Right? The Chiddush HaRim is just talking about life. You know, sometimes it's just good to be honest. Right? This is an incredible time in general for honesty. Just to be honest of what we are, what we're not. Above 60, the probability of your change plummets. Is it there? Of course it's there. Is it possible? Always possible. Can you change in any given moment you put your mind to it? 1,000%. But again, just statistically speaking, if you're a statistician and you're running the numbers on the probability of a change of person above 60 and below 60, the person below 60 has a much better, the numbers are in his or her favor if they're below 60 and more against the favor of the person above 60. Says the Chiddush HaRim, that's not an indictment, that's not a condemnation, that's just human nature. Human nature is, the older I get, the more set in my ways I am, the less likely I am to change. But you see something amazing from the Chiddush HaRim. We start from the Chose of Lublin, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu purposely juxtaposes the section of Erchin vows right next to the Tokacha. To teach me what? Every person has a value. No matter how badly you mess up in life, we all have a value. I can make the worst mistakes imaginable, chas v'shalom, but I still have a value. But where does my value lie? Right? We say every person has a value. So what is my value? Meaning, what generates my value? It's nice to say we all have a value. It's nice to say that we all have an erech. But what generates my value in life? What is my value? And what the Chiddush HaRim teaches us is, the value we each possess is fundamentally linked to our ability to change. The reason why I have a value as long as I breathe is because at any given moment, I could change if I want to. I could become someone better if I want to. I could become someone holier if I want to. All it requires, you know, a lot of times we think that in order to affect change, like we have these grand plans. I'm going to change, or I want to affect change. But in order for that to happen, I need this person to do this, this person to do that. My husband has to do this. My wife has to do this. I need my kids to do this. My next door neighbor has to do this. The poodle has to do this. Everyone has to do their, mailman has to do this. Everybody has to do their part. And as long as everyone does their part, then I'm ready for change. Okay. If you want to change, It's your choice and only your choice. It doesn't really matter what your spouse does want or doesn't want. That could have other ramifications and implications. And it doesn't really matter what anyone outside of you wants or doesn't want. If you want to change, you could change. So says the Chiddush Ha'arim, the value that each of us possess, the immutable value we possess, is fundamentally and inherently tethered to our ability to change. That's why I have a value in this world. That's why no matter how badly I mess up, I have value. Why? Because I could change. And I can become whatever I want. Obviously within a framework, but I can become whatever I want, whoever I want, whenever I want, if I truly put my mind to it. But therefore, says the Chiddush Ha'arim, the greater the probability of your change, the higher your value. The lower the probability of your change, the lower your value. That's not a personal statement, and not to say that the person over 60 can't change. Chas v'shalom. Just the person over 60 has to be honest with him or herself and say, I have been living a certain way for a long time. And if I'm really honest about changing it, I have to be ready to put in some significant effort. Is it possible? Absolutely possible. But to be honest, says the Chiddush Ha'arim, you have to know. I know it sounds like a little bit of a downer. You have to know, the odds are against you. I know it sounds crazy. The odds are against you. Why? Because most people in your bracket don't change. Because most people in your age bracket tend to just settle in, right? Tend to ride the wave, tend to become a bit more comfortable, and don't change. Can you defy your bracket? Can you go against the stats? Can you defy the numbers? Absolutely. But be ready to roll up your sleeves and fight hard. Because over 60, you have become an ingrained creature of habit. You can change it at will, but it's going to take work. Below 60, it takes work also. But below 60, the advantage I have is less years of ingrained behavior. That's all. It's just a question of time. Less years of ingrained behavior. So less years of ingrained behavior just to make change a little bit easier to affect. So says the Chiddush, isn't this incredible? Each of us has a value. Like we saw from the Chozev of Lublin. And we have a value no matter how bad the decisions we make in life. But our fundamental value is dependent on how ready we are to change. When I'm younger, the capacity of propensity and change is higher, therefore my value goes up. As I get older, the probability of change goes down, and therefore my value goes down. But again, I can't say enough. No matter how old you are, change is always possible. Just if you want to really affect change in your life, you have to understand what it entails. And you have to understand what it's going to demand of you. And if you're above 60, change is always possible. Just might take a little bit more commitment, a little bit more work. See, it's interesting. We normally think that as we get older, change becomes easier because some of the things that we battle with when we're younger are not there. That might be true. Sometimes the fire of desire is lessened a little bit as we get older. And therefore, again, change becomes easier in certain areas, but it becomes so much more complicated because I am now an ingrained creature of habit. Let's bring this now full circle. So now we understand that each of us possesses a value no matter what we do or don't do in life. No matter how bad the mistakes may be, I have a value. Where does my value come from? My value comes from my ability to change. My value is higher when I'm younger because change is easier when I'm younger and becomes diminished when I'm older because change becomes less probable when I'm older. Let's take this all the way back. Remember again, question we had 40 minutes ago, maybe 50 minutes ago, which was, well, 40 minutes ago, which was, Menashe is trying to go ahead and highlight the greatness of God. Right? See the greatness of God. We spoke about, you can see the greatness of God through the beautiful natural world, external. You can see the greatness of God through the body. But Menashe said, but if you really want to see the greatness, the real greatness of God, look how he split the seas. Look how we split the seas. Look how we split the Yam Suf when we left Egypt. Look how we split the Jordan River when we came into Eretz Yisrael. Why? What is Menashe saying? Because the greatness of God. See, Menashe is saying, we learn from God. God models for us what to be, how to behave, how to self-actualize. So Menashe says, you know, when I look at everything that God does, the greatest thing God ever did was split the sea. Because what did he do when he split the sea? He changed water into dry land. And then he changed dry land back into water. You see, the splitting of the sea is the greatest demonstration of the ability to affect complete, comprehensive, cathartic change. The splitting of the sea may not be the best, the greatest miracle. There might have been miracles that are greater in scope, but the splitting of the sea represents taking something that is A and fundamentally, totally changing it into B. Taking something that is water. Water is not dry land. And dry land is not water. They're opposites. They are polar opposites. What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do by Yam Suf? And what did he do again by the Yarden? He fundamentally changed A into B. What did God show us? What did God show humanity? That change is possible. That change is possible. That dramatic change is possible. That you could go from water to dry land, because you see, without those miracles, you would have thought maybe some level of change is possible. But dramatic, cathartic, comprehensive, total change, impossible. Not true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu split the sea and turned it into dry land. Remember, again, I also appreciate, you ever wonder, especially by Yam Suf, you see that the Mefarshim point this out. The Pasuk points it out that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu split the sea, he said HaKadosh Baruch Hu split the sea and took them on the Yabasha, took them onto dry land. You always wonder to yourself, like almost like Dayenu, if God would have just split the sea by itself, even if he didn't dry out the seabed, right? Even if he didn't dry out the seabed, right? That would have been enough. Okay, so our shoes would have gotten a little muddy. I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows us. He knows that somebody would have said, come on, really? Really? You know, I have to get sand on my shoes now. I have to walk into the house after this. Who wants to be able to do that? HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows us. But on a serious level, why did God have to dry out the seabed? Now you understand. Because the miracle of the splitting of the bodies of water was not just a utilitarian miracle to get us from point A to point B. It was a miracle that modeled for us the greatest miracle of the human condition, which is the ability to change. And lest you think that change can't really be all that dramatic, that change is really just nuanced, you can move yourself a little bit from here to there, but you can't really do anything too overwhelming. HaKadosh Baruch Hu turned water into dry land, and then turned dry land back into water. Not once, not just by Yam Suf, but twice. The Yam Suf and the Yarden. And therefore, when King Menashe composes this particular capital, and he says, you know, I look around the world and I always try to see the greatness of God. And I see the greatness of God in a variety of ways. I see the greatness of God in the beautiful physical nature of the world, the beautiful, beautiful tapestry of the natural world. I see God in the greatness of my body, in the ability of everything to work so well. But Menashe says, do you know, when I really want to see the greatness of God, I think about the splitting of the seas. Because it was those miracles that not only got us from point A to point B, not only allowed us to escape the clutches of the Egyptians or got us into the land of Israel, but it was those miracles that taught us that water could turn to land, land can turn to water, and change is always possible. That is what Menashe is writing about in this kapitel. L'chu chazu mifalo, l'chu ur'u mifalos Hashem. If you want to see the greatness of God, the greatest thing that God has ever done for us is the ability to show us that total, comprehensive, cathartic change is possible. And now again, remember, let's loop it all the way back. And with this, we'll conclude. You appreciate this even more. It's a profound lesson in and of itself. But you begin to appreciate it even more when you understand who the author is. Right? What does Menashe want more than anything? What does he want more than anything in the last decades of his life? He wants to know that he has the ability to change. And he wants to be able to broadcast to the world, even though, as you saw in last week's shiur, they didn't really listen, that he has the ability to change and that he has changed. The man who was water became dry land. And lest you think that real change is not possible, l'chu ur'u mifalos Elokim. Go and see the greatest miracles of God. And the greatest miracles is when God splits the water and turns it into dry land. So it turns out that Menashe teaches us in this incredible, just two lines. There's only two psukim in the whole kapitel. This is why, by the way, I think we're a couple of years into Tehillim already. We're only up to chapter 66. Because again, you could spend hours on two lines, right? And you could spend hours on five. It's incredible. But we learn from here an incredible lesson. We learn from here, first off, from the Parsha and from Sefer Tehillim, we learn the power that every person has value. Every person has value, right? No matter how bad your decisions in life, we all have value. But we also recognize that our value in life is fundamentally tethered to our ability to change. The younger we are, the greater the probability of change. The older we are, the more difficult and perhaps less probable, but in no way impossible, does change become. Each of us has value no matter what we do, but that value is manifest when we decide to use it ultimately to affect some level of change. Whether it's more nuanced change, because remember, not all of us need great change. Baruch Hashem, you're all Nashim Sidkanios, right? So you don't necessarily need comfort. But again, sometimes all we need is a little bit of nuance changed. But even if we need Yam Suf change, and even if we need Yardain change, to know that that change is possible, whether it's probable or not, depends on your age bracket. But even if it's not probable, it's always possible. And if it was possible for HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Yam Suf and the Yardain, it was possible for Menashe, it is most certainly possible for us as well. We'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up Emir Hashem with Kapitel Son of Zion, chapter 67 next week. Wishing everyone a wonderful day and an uplifting rest of the week as well. Thank you again. Thank you to Mr. Shulman, to Witt, for making all of this possible. Wishing everyone a wonderful day. Yes, I will. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.